Welcome to Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs, the podcast that gives you an unfiltered behind-the-scenes look at what it's really like being a woman in the middle who's over 50 and following her entrepreneurial dreams. Grab a superhero cape, girlfriend, because you deserve one. I'm your host, Master Certified Life Coach and Midlife Mentor, Susie Rosenstein, and I am excited to inspire you with interviews that feature all of this midlife amazingness. Let's go. Hey there, welcome back to the show. We have another really exciting interview ahead of us about being an entrepreneur your whole life, from commercials as a kid to accidentally ending up in comedy, if you can believe that. So good. Today, you'll be meeting Elaine Williams, a woman in the middle entrepreneur who morphed all of her entrepreneurial experience in performing into helping women with video marketing and signature talk coaching. Welcome to the show, Elaine. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Susie. I am so excited to be here. I can tell it's going to be fun. So, yay.
As soon as I saw you pop on my Zoom, I knew it was going to be fun too. I agree. So I know we're going to have a good conversation about your midlife entrepreneur story. We're going to be talking about your business, what's going really well, and also what midlife issues might be getting in your way a little bit here and there, might be challenging for you in your life as well as being a business owner. So let's start off with this nice big question. How old are you? How long have you been an entrepreneur? What was your entrepreneurial journey like? And what do you do? Take it away.
Okay, so I am 55, which I am like, how did this happen? So my parents divorced when I was four, and it was the 70s. So in my four-year-old brain, something was wrong with me, the world, and my family. And luckily, my mom got custody. That's a whole one-woman show. But she took us all around San Antonio selling campfire candy. And my sister was even cuter. We were like, we looked like little, we were just really cute. And we sold all the candy we sold. So that was the beginning.
Wait, what is campfire candy?
Campfire candy. Well, you know how there's Girl Scouts cookies. So there's campfires and there's the bluebirds and then the bigger, older one. And obviously they're not as well known, but they had amazing candy like toffee and Oh Honey Child. So we would go and sell it, and we sold a lot. And that's when I got to do my first commercial with the campfire donkey. And we danced around in a studio. And I thought, oh my God, light, sound, action. And then I found theater. I did my first musical and I was in the fourth grade, The Sound of Music. And then when I was 15, I did my very first movie, The Dirt Bike Kid. They needed a teenage girl with big boobs. So And my agent at the time said, you usually don't book the very first thing that you go out for. And I have beginner's luck. So anyway, so I was always like doing acting stuff, but I always wanted to have my own money because I had a crazy, cruel stepmother who had a lot of trauma and she was never able to get help for it. So she was probably bipolar and was a raging alcoholic and addict. So there was a lot of, I would joke, my family, there was trauma, there was drugs, there was drinking, and that was just on the way to school in the mornings. So, and then my father was a dentist, so he wouldn't let us eat candy. We could snort it. We just couldn't eat it. So anyway, so I found theater and I was like, this is it. And then worked my way through college with no help. That was really hard. And then had this dream of, in Austin, I had a house sitting business. So I was always like doing acting and waiting tables, but then I would take care of people's dogs and cats and iguanas and a museum quality fern. I was always like, please God, don't let me kill this fern, And so I was
we've had fern angst over here too, but I don't think it
I'm like, okay, I'll water your plants. Ugh, I always say a prayer, But I've always been the kind of person I want multiple streams of income. And I think it's because my stepmother was so like, here's money, and she used to say, you better marry a rich man because you'll never be able to take care of yourself. And when you're a kid and you hear that every day, it really got into my psyche. And I feel like, it's like, Elaine, you've been taking care of yourself for years, but there's still those old things that still need to be healed from time to time.
For sure.
Okay, so I moved to New York City. I got sober all at the same time, which I would not recommend. People kept saying, you're really funny. And I was like, what do you mean? Because I knew nobody. I knew like one person when I moved to New York, and everything was so expensive. And so that's how I found comedy, because people kept telling me I should try it. And then when I got to the dysfunctional family part in my show, and I saw the whole audience bend over howling, I had a light bulb moment. Oh my God, I'm supposed to help people who maybe won't go to therapy, but I can help them with my story. And so that was really a huge epiphany for me on my entrepreneurial journey. And I had already been going to life coaching, getting life coach training with Debbie Ford, because I know like, okay, I want to be an actress. I don't want to be a waitress when I'm 80. I got to figure out something else. I didn't like personal training. I didn't like being at the gym that long, blah, blah, blah. So I loved the whole like, well, let's talk about why you're eating ice cream at midnight. You know, I was always wanting to get into the emotional aspects of stuff. So I did all this training, and anyway, here I am. You know, it keeps going on and on and on, but that's a basic journey.
Well, I love that epiphany that you had, seriously, to you're doing stand up and you're watching the audience really respond to a part of your act that you didn't think was the big part, the really impactful part.
Yes, and I share this because I grew up doing Neil Simon and being funny in the moment, but I had never even considered stand up because to me it was so scary. And so I take this class and everybody else in the class has already done stand up. And I didn't know how to write, and it didn't occur to me to watch good comics. So I just kept going to the open mics and trying to figure it out. And so I would come home from class and I would cry because I was like, this is really hard. So I just said, no, just finish the damn class. So I had prepped myself, think of it as a monologue, expect no laughs. And so my friends said, I wish I had taped it, you know, because they said that I looked shocked that people were laughing. And, you know, so, and I'm grateful because it really helped me, you know, that's how I fell into speaking on college campuses, Susie, because I wanted to do comedy. And people said, Elaine, there's so many people who are doing comedy and you're going to be up against people who've been on the Tonight Show 10 times. And they said, but didn't you have a bunch of addictions? And I was like, yes. Because I was bulimic with periods of anorexia. Oh. Then I did drugs to lose weight, crystal meth, ecstasy, cocaine, and then drinking alcohol. So I had all of the things. And so I came in as the funny eating disorder girl. And at the time, the college people were like, I've never heard anybody talk about the emotional aspect. And I'm like, yeah, we all know information. We have more information ever in the history of the world, but that knowledge in itself doesn't mean shit, you know?
Yeah.
It's like teaching people how to deal with their emotions and how to deal with stress and da 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 da. So that's what I came in. And then they said, can you talk about drugs and alcohol? And I was like, sure. And then they asked my last agent said, can you talk about your sexual assault? And I was like, let me just, you know, give me a minute. And I prayed and I meditated, but I thought, you know what, Elaine, if you can save one person, you need to share. And this was before Me Too was so mainstream. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because it's such a trigger topic, right? And so I worked and worked and worked the first time I did it, you know, in New Mexico. And I didn't want to be too dramatic, but I didn't want to be flippant. And no matter what I did, somebody would complain. And at first I was very upset. And then I thought, you know what, Elaine, you're triggering people. So is your commitment bigger than the popularity contest, you know? And so I have a book, How to Not Get Assaulted and What to Do If You Do, you know, it's crazy. The freshman year in college is called the red zone, the fall semester, specifically because that's when everybody ODs, gets, you know, drinks himself to death. And that's when most women and some guys get raped or assaulted or whatever. And so the fact that we have terms for it, and, you know, and I'm so glad we're talking about it now as a culture, but, you know, back in 2011, when I first started speaking on this topic, it was crazy. Once you start noticing rape culture and all the different things, you can't unsee it. So, you know, it's fascinating and horrifying, and I'm still happy to talk about it, but I'm glad that I've been able to morph into other things too, because it is such a heavy topic. And so I'm grateful that Me Too became so mainstream, because it's needed to come out for so long. So anyway, so that's how I morphed in the whole college thing.
Wow. Like, you just said so much. Like, okay.
How do I make this funny?
Well, I really appreciate, I spent 27 years in health education, addiction and mental health, doing all that work before I got into coaching. And I certainly know what it's like to have mental health challenges in the family. So like I've had a lot of stuff, and to see somebody like you taking this kind of thing head on, it's so courageous and it's so powerful. And I'm fascinated by the part of it where you made this leap from comedy. You've already made the leap from acting, but from comedy to this kind of speaking on stage. So what was that like for you? Because that's different. Like, you can be a little bit funny, but in that type of situation, it's usually got a different focus.
Yes? Oh my gosh. Thank you for that question. So, you know, I've been performing my whole life. I sang and danced Guys and Dolls for 4,000 people. And there was something about, and I had been going to Toastmasters because I knew I needed to learn how to speak as Elaine and not a character. Right. So I was going and I pushed myself. So I was, you know, doing comedy, and then I would go speak every week. I would be like the last minute replacement. But then right before my very first showcase, I thought I was going to throw. I was so nervous. I grabbed my first agent and I said, Mary, I'm going to practice my talk, and I need you to tell me that it's great, even if you hate it. Okay. You know, cause it felt different.
Yeah.
And, but really at the end of the day, it's a conversation. Right? It's a conversation. And I did have to every once in a while, because you know, your body, right? You use your body as an instrument. And so sometimes when I was speaking, I would have to go, it's okay, they're just listening. You're not doing comedy. Because, you know, when you're used to like doing the joke and then you get a response or not. And then you know, there's that constant feedback, but usually you get, and so learning how to change gears was definitely interesting, you know, and I learned like some audiences, you know, I would do a big, like, look, I'm not making fun of anybody else. I use humor because it helped me heal. And it's going to help you remember what I'm teaching you, which could save a life. And so when I would set it up in that framework, it helped people not be so offended.
Right. You're like, here's the container, my friends. This is what we're doing. But you know, you mentioned that you wanted to throw up. I'm going to say similar, but I wasn't speaking on stage, but I was publishing the first blog I'd ever written about my parents' death. My mother died when I was a kid, then my father died. And so it happened both as a young child. So I wrote about it. I thought from a midlife perspective, it's very important to share. Whenever I share, I get at least somebody reaching out to me saying, thank you so much for sharing that, right? Like, it always happens.
Yeah.
And I needed to get coaching. I thought I was going to die. Like, I just was freaking out about sharing something personal. And I had the same experience with you, just in terms of talking myself back into the perspective of, you know, I'm compelled to help people. I know this will help. It's okay. And of course it was okay. And I felt so good, and it freed me up. But wow.
It can feel so vulnerable.
Yeah. Yep.
And I know that feeling. I got into flipping houses, talk about entrepreneurial stuff. So I got tired of the boys' club. I would have a better set than a guy, and the booker would pick the guy. And I was like, you know, so I wanted to have a comedy club for women, with women. And so I thought, well, let me get into flipping houses, because I already had one 3-family house. Anyway, worst timing ever, 2008. But anyway, I forgot exactly where I was going with that. Vulnerable. And so anytime I shared about any, you know, it can feel so scary, you know, sharing, whether it's your mistakes or like stuff about your family, it can just feel so exposed.
Yeah. It's true. Thank God for Brené Brown and all the work that she's done on vulnerability. It's kind of like a pass. It's like, yes, you may do this. It's good. It's okay. You're not going to die. It's helpful. You know, like her work in this area has been so appreciated.
Yes. And I talk about this too. I love that you shared about that because it helps people. So I was driving around listening to Brené Brown. And when she started talking about buried shame, I lost it. And my life made sense because here I am. I have 10 years sobriety. I've been in therapy. I've done a million other transformational work, landmark, EMDR, EFT, you know, yoga, green juice, sit upside down and, you know, whatever. But I couldn't understand how sometimes I'd be going along in my life and I would have a disappointment and it would take me like all of a sudden I would just be like barely able to go to work and work out. And I realized it was buried shame. It was stuff that I had not processed yet.
Wow.
And I'm so grateful for her. And like Rob Lowe has the best book, Stories I Only Tell My Friends. I remember driving around sobbing because he explained how I felt as somebody in recovery when I haven't been going to enough meetings or praying or meditating or working my program. I feel like somebody has wound me too tight and it's like my head hurts. Wow. Anyway, just, you know, I just love it when you can read something or feel something and it like your life makes sense on a whole nother level, you know?
Thank God for people sharing the hard stuff, right? Because we really, as humans, we really need it.
We do.
Really and need we, it.
I think, you know, I know when I'm triggered, I'm automatically all alone. No one's helping me. It's like I go to Home Depot. I have a joke like Home Depot reminds me of my family of origin. Nobody's there. Nobody will help me. Even if I show my cleavage, nobody will help me.
Oh, my God. All right. So tell me, while we're on the topic of help, how do you help people? What are you doing?
Oh, well, thank you for that question. So I've been working on my latest, you know, I show women how to show up powerfully on camera and off in their life and when they're speaking.
That's very clear. I got it. Yeah, you do it. You were born to do it.
I think I really believe that my soul picked this crazy ass family so that I would be abused every which way and then be driven to heal myself so that then I can go help others along the way. Like you know, my stepmother was my biggest teacher. And here's a miracle. So when she finally OD'd, because we had tried everything, and she OD'd from morphine, pumped herself with her pump. No, we couldn't figure out how to do the funeral because nobody was really religious. And finally I said, I want to do it by White Rock Lake in Dallas, because that's where we kind of were before everything got really crazy. And so I had ordered butterflies. And I did the ceremony. I had done my own ceremony in Austin to a tree, really letting her have it. And this time it was this beautiful, simple ceremony. And it was under a canopy in July. It was not too hot. Like God was with us. And we released the butterflies at the end to symbolize that she was free and that we were free. And it was one of the most healing things wow. ever done. And my family was blown away. And, you know, it was magical. And the next day my dad was like, Elaine, there's butterflies by the office. I said, maybe that's spirit thanking us, you know?
You were a leader. You captivated your family crowd is what, you know? The name of your business is really, I know that captivate the crowd could mean just about anything, but your stories are so compelling and so like, it's like a knife cutting through all the crap. To really
thank you.
Like reach out, you know, and I know you probably just shared like the tip of the iceberg here.
Do you know Glennon Doyle Melton?
I know the podcast.
Okay. So she has several books and her first two books are like, whoa, somebody gave one to me and I was on the plane and within two pages, I was like sobbing. So, you know, I just love it when you know, you're speaking from your heart and somebody vibes with you. Oh, you know, it's the best.
Indeed, for sure. So I'm looking at your notes here and the question that I want to talk about next is midlife challenges. Like, that's like what this podcast is all about. And I just think there's something crazy going on at this intersection of being in midlife age and stage and trying to run a business. So tell me how midlife challenges have shown up for you. How is it getting in the way?
Well, I have this amazing sister. She's 2 years younger, but she's always, not always, she's sort of more mature and stable. And a couple of years ago, she was like, Elaine, I need you. Can you move back? Like, I'm really tired. Our mother is getting more demanding, our father. And I was like, let me, you know, and I said, how about if I keep my house? Cause it's finally cash flowing in New Jersey. I finally got great tenants who aren't killing each other. You know, can I just come live with you and I'll come help and I can still grow my business? And so we thought we would try it. So in May last year, I came down for a month, then I went back, then I came down for, you know, and I was so humble, Susie. I thought, oh, I'm just going to swoop in. I'm going to get my dad set up with da-da-da-da-da. No, this is like a way bigger project. And everybody who's done caregiving is like, uh-huh. And so I've been in Dallas since October, and I'm finally going back to New Jersey in June for a little bit. So that's been interesting. Like, I've lived alone with some part-time boyfriends. So I'm like, oh, living with other human beings. Whoa. And two of them are teenagers. So that's been very different, going on vacation with your niece and nephew versus living with them. Now, luckily my sister and her husband are like the most laid back, yummy people. Awesome. They're just awesome. But yeah, my dad is, I love him so much, and he's 81, and he is what I call unwrangable.
Wow.
Wrangle him in. He wants to work. And when the Southwest screwed up his flights, you would have thought he had to go back for some, like, he was like, I have to get back. You know, we had to get him the last car rental to drive all the way from Dallas to El Paso for his substitute dentistry job. He made it. But I was terrified. Like, am I saying my dad to his death? You know, am I the worst daughter ever? But he likes to work and he needs to work. Right. And I respect that. But I'm also trying to put the pieces together so that when he does stop, you know, and then my mother is forgetting things more and more and more. And like, she has this amazing assistant. Thank you, Angela. Like, we're like, thank you. So she's there Tuesday through Saturday. So on Sundays, I go visit. And on Mondays, Andrea goes to visit on her way home from work. Well, on Mondays, our mother calls both of us like 10 times. And so I know, and her neighbors keep saying that she comes over like 5 times a day. Mm. And so I know that we're getting ready to step into that next thing. And, right. You know, money, insurance, you know, there's so many things
to
navigate. And I love my dad, but you know, I'll be home working, doing interviews, coaching, teaching, and he'll just like barge in if he's in town. And I'm like, so yeah, it's challenging and it's exhausting a little bit, but it's also healing, Susie. Like, I love them. They did the best job they could. And they were not very conscious or aware, like both very smart book wise, but they're like, boundaries. You mean like between Canada and America? You know, like, no, it's a different kind of boundary. And I know they did the best job they could. So in some ways it's healing to try to show up for them, but it's also like sad, grieving, funny, weird.
Yes. All the
that. Wow. Like, it's like the whole gamut. And
yeah.
And I don't know about you, but like, I'm good with, I can deal with anger. I can deal with fear. Ooh, sadness. Oh, do you really?
It's hard. Yeah.
It's like, so it's heartbreaking, but I'm also grateful that I can grow my business when there's internet and phone, you know?
Yeah, 100%. And that's something that COVID did for us, I think, in a bizarre way. It really challenged our creativity with flexible work situations, working off site. Yes. Yeah, so that's really great. So you said that you're more self-conscious about stage work now with your body. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I grew up on diets. I was put on my first diet in the first grade. So I started depriving and feeling, you know, and all this stuff. And I have done so much work. I've gone to OA. I've studied with Jeanine Roth. She talked about eating disorders when Phil Donahue had brown hair before he had white hair. Like, she's amazing. So I have done some work, hot yoga, you know, and I think now that I am officially in menopause, you know, and I have not looked into bioidenticals yet because I know it's an expensive thing, but my boobs, like, I used to be able to like cut the carbs out, work out really hard, drink extra water, throw in some more vegetables, and I could see a difference in my body in like 3 days. Now I'm like, I work out just as hard. I'm eating hardly nothing, and my boobs are still huge. Like, a part of me is like, oh my God. And I'm 5'2.5". So I don't need to be a triple D, you know? And so and it's like, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. So I keep going, really? Come on, you know? And so, yeah,
It's true, though. Our old tricks don't work anymore, you know? Those old tricks.
Oh my gosh. So, yeah. You know, I'm going to keep working out. I'm sure I can keep futzing with my caloric blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if you know, I don't want to spend 10 grand getting a reduction, you know? So I don't know. I'm trying to learn how to deal with it. And, you know, one of my clients she's a bra fitter.
I was just thinking there's a bra goddess out there who can help you. Yeah.
There's a lot. So yeah, but I get it. Like, my body's definitely changing. I'm carrying weight more up here than I, you know, it's just interesting. I didn't think that was going to happen. And I do forget things. I was I do a lot of interviews, and the other day I was like, well, it'll come back to me, you know? So I'm trying to have a sense of humor about it. And dating,
that was my next question for you. So what's going on with that? I can't even imagine. I've been married, it'll be 29 years this year.
What is your secret?
Oh my God. I don't know. I think it's acceptance. It's just, you know, I keep trying to just put things in perspective, that the things that drive me crazy, there are more things that don't drive me crazy than do drive me crazy, you know, but there's an interview coming out soon on my other podcast about long-term relationships, because I realized I hadn't discussed that in depth on a podcast yet. So I met him in a personal ad before online dating, like wrote a letter to the newspaper.
I love that. You know, I have to say, one of my clients is a marriage coach, and I'm helping her work on her videos for this online project. And I'm loving it because I'm learning so much. Now, I have never had the guts to actually walk down the aisle. I was engaged. He asked me on top of a Mayan temple. So I felt like I had to say yes, or I might have been sacrificed. You know, like, I was like, oh, I was so surprised. But it's like there's a lot of ghosting, and there's some bots. Like, I was on this one app and I thought, oh, finally, this guy seems cool. And then I get an email, we have removed Edward from the thing because it was AI or a bot or something. So, you know, and then I have a joke. So I teach women how to be great on camera. And so they're always like, I have all these guys. I'm like, just ignore them. If they get too creepy, block them. But other than that, just ignore them. But it's so hard to know what's real, what's not. And I guess, Susie, here's the magic. For so long, I was seeking validation. And because I felt so unloved by my stepmother, because she, you know, she was just a very sick person, and my father was not able to sort of advocate, you know. And so for the longest time, I felt like if I bring a guy home, I can prove I'm lovable. Somebody loves me. And I'm not famous as an actress, but I have a guy. And that was like, I needed that. And I was conditioned, right? I was conditioned. Yeah. Better find a man, you know, don't be that. Don't be too loud. Guys don't like that. You know, all the conditioning we got in the 70s and 80s.
Totally.
And I had never, and because I used to be like, oh, the fun part's over. So then I would start looking for the next one while I was getting out of what I was in. I always had guys waiting in the wing. And I've always had guy friends, and there were always a couple who were like, you know. And so finally I had a mentor that said, you need to be single. And I was like, I what? You know? And it was one of the best things I've ever done.
Yeah.
And so now I'm sort of, I don't know what you call me, but I'm okay. Like, it would be great to have a life partner. I don't need to be get married at this point, you know? I mean, if it happens, awesome. But the fact that like my life is so full and I give back and I love the work that I do and I volunteer, I speak for AA when they ask, my life is so full that I feel complete without a man. And
it's beautiful.
Completely opposite of the way I was raised and conditioned.
Definitely.
So many of us, you know?
Well, one of the things that you touched on, like, this is a result of you being wiser. And I know in your notes, you said something that I really believe. I'm always saying we're not just older, we're older and wiser at this point, for God's sake.
Thank God.
I know. Like, we've been around the block. We learned a few things. So have you noticed anything else about being an older woman as an entrepreneur, like being in the workforce, being an entrepreneur? I don't know. The workforce is the right, being in a career. I don't know. Are we in a workforce when we're an entrepreneur? I don't know. Anyways, I don't know. Just thinking out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's it like to be older and working for yourself?
Well, I think I'm 55 and when I waited tables forever. And when I go to restaurants, everybody looks like they're 12 to me, you know? But I do think it's a very exciting time. Growing up, I thought I didn't think I was going to live past 30, to be honest, because I made so many crazy choices and I was so, you know, I was sexually assaulted many times. I was a victim of domestic violence in my 20s. Like, so many bad things happened, right? And so, so I still feel like I'm so lucky to be alive and healthy. But right now it is exciting because I think there is a huge wave of women supporting other women.
Yes.
And we're like, we don't need the guys to make us a space at the table. We've got our own table and there's room for everybody who wants to come because women are inclusive and there's no glass ceiling because we've made our own thing. And, you know, I still get goosebumps when I see women supporting women. It's just such a beautiful thing. I grew up, my stepmother and my mother were very competitive with me and they hated each other. Looking back, it's a miracle nobody was shot because we had guns. It was Texas, right?
So, wow, yeah.
You know, and so, and I have been the catty woman in the bathroom feeling threatened by somebody who's skinnier, taller, prettier. And I've been the woman who was, you know, when I was on crystal meth, I was super skinny. And I've been that woman where everybody's looking at me, you know, and it's not fun. And now I think there's a whole of like, you know what? You can have the caveman. I don't even know if I want a caveman. Maybe I want a cave woman. Maybe I just want to have dogs. Like, you know, so I feel like.
Oh, aren't dogs the best?
Oh, they're the best. But yeah, I feel like it's an exciting time. And yeah, I mean, do I feel invisible sometimes? Yes. I used to be able to dress up and turn heads. And sometimes that happens and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm grateful because now I know really the validation can come from within.
Yeah, so beautiful.
You know, and it's hard. I feel vulnerable and I have wrinkles and one of my clients is 84. She just finished her third book. Like, that's amazing.
I love it. I love that you're really appreciating where you're at. And you're right. It really does feel, and there are stats to prove this too, about the number of women becoming entrepreneurs over 50. Like, there is a lot more support and the internet has really helped, and working on Zoom and not being stuck, having to go someplace. All of it has just really helped women start dreaming again, really be able to dream big. And you're doing that, and you're in midlife, and there are some things that are getting in the way a little bit. So it's all happening. So what would you say that you're surprised by being an entrepreneur at this age?
I would say it has been a pleasant surprise to have support. And, you know, I'm friends with a lot of guys, and there's one guy who's like a speaker and a comic, and it's just interesting because some guys are just not getting it still. You know, I'm amazed. They'll be like, you know, there's not that many good guy parts in this thing. And it's like, yeah, because you guys had all the parts for so long. Like it's interesting. Or like, you know, women, when I do connection calls, it's like, how can I support you? What are you looking for? Do you want to get on stages? How can I blah, blah, blah. And women just do that. They reciprocate almost always. And it's been kind of a sad surprise. You know, a couple of my friends, like they'll be like, Elaine, can you buy my book for 99 cents to get the, you know, and I'm like, of course, but then they don't reciprocate. And so that's been a little bit, you know, like, oh, and then I guess another thing is I did not realize that I would be sad about losing actors and musicians who I've never met. Like, I know, like, okay, you're going to lose people in your family, friends, people that you knew through college, you know, high school, whatever. But like the death of Prince, David Bowie. And I think, you know, it's like pet grief. Well, now there's like famous people grief, whatever. But like David Bowie was like this awakening, amazing, talented. He was just so one of a kind. And, you know, when you grow up with somebody, and especially
that was my first concert was,
oh my God, my sister loved it. And so just like feeling like that sadness of like, expect to feel sad about Prince, but Purple Rain. Oh my God. You know, and I guess too, like when you try to explain to somebody who's, you know, like my niece and nephew, and they look at you like you're crazy and you're like, you understand, you know, or like, I guess another thing is I do feel like we're so fragmented. Like I love the internet. It's been amazing game changer. You know, there's not so many gatekeepers or they're, you know, different, but you know, in the growing up, like, do you remember going to school? Everybody watched Happy Days and then you talked about
it. Yeah. Like,
there was not, we all watched the same few things.
Yes.
And so that's sort of like the zeitgeist, Fantasy Island, Love Boat, right?
Yes, like, yes.
You grew up with that. Yeah. And now there's so many different shows and you know, it's fragmented. And so in some ways it's exciting, but I feel like people are missing out on, that was a magical time.
Yeah, I really hear you. And you know what you just said about some of these famous people passing, it's more jarring for me too than I ever expected. And when Gary Shandling died, I was, that one really got to me. I just thought I had more time to see him. I saw him once in concert. Joan Rivers really, that one really got me too. You know, there was a suicide in that family and I was always very, I always felt very connected to her.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, my kids are really into music. They're in their 20s. And I'm just like, see everybody you can. You don't want to have a regret about who you didn't see live. I didn't see Mel Torme live.
Oh.
An absolute regret. Absolute regret. And I had a band director once. I play saxophone. And
oh my God, a cool, sexy.
And he played, Mel Torme was, he played in a Mel Torme band or something. Somehow he had a connection to Mel Torme. And I just went, wow, 1 degree of separation or whatever.
Yeah, that's
like as close as I'll get.
Robert Goulet kissed my cheek when I was fifth grade.
Oh my God.
He was the only kid in the Fairmont Hotel. And, you know, it's just, there's certain eras, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just told my kids, like, go to all the concerts, go see everybody you want to see. And they love it. And me, I couldn't even deal with going to a concert these days. I can't even imagine doing that.
It's funny. I have a comic friend who's also in AA, and he was like, Elaine, I got tickets to Billy Joel. Nobody can go. Will you come? And I was like, okay, yes, Madison Square Garden, I'd never really been to. So I went and it was amazing.
Yeah, Billy Joel I would go to, absolutely. You
know, and we were way up high, but we could see the stage. And then we ran out afterwards. But then I got COVID on the train ride home because I didn't have my mask on. But it was still totally worth it. But yeah, I wanted to see Joan Rivers. And then also Les Paul, he played at the Iridium Jazz Club on Monday nights. And I walked by there every Monday night, like on the way to work. And then he died and I was kicking myself. And same with Johnny Cash, because I love Johnny Cash. So yeah, so it's like, you know what? I better go see Dolly Parton soon too. Oh, I mean, she's still kicking it, but yeah.
Yeah. Do that. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you this one other thing before we close. What are you focusing now on in your business and your life? So I know you've got this Texas, New Jersey thing happening. Your parents are aging. That's all really challenging. But what are you focusing on in your business and what you said dating with your life?
Well, thank you. I have fallen in love with speaking again. The last few college gigs I did were very rough. And one, I missed my connection by 5 minutes. And it was because there was a blizzard and a hurricane. And I had done everything in my power to get to the earlier thing, to try to change. I did everything I could. And so it took me 2 days to get to this college in Nebraska. And I was paid to deliver a talk that night, but I was doing some bonus talks as a give. And they wanted to dock my pay because I was going to be late for one of the bonus gigs because of the hurricane and the blizzard. And I remember thinking, you know, this is not the model for me. So, you know, I just thought, I'm done. And so I have re-fallen in love with speaking live and speaking. I love speaking and I finally feel like I'm owning it.
Oh, that's great.
A gift. And so I'm excited because I want to be global again. So that's one thing. And I never thought I'd say this, but I'm getting to practice my leadership skills so that I can have the right team so that I can do what I do best and keep delegating the rest. And that has been the slowest, most torturous path of life. What not to do, who not to hire, to talk, you know. So because I love what I do. And I know that I can get more help with some of the support stuff, mm-hmm. with the posting and the scheduling and things so that I can do what I do best, you know.
Absolutely. Well, what's the best website for people to get a hold of you?
If you go to captivatethecrowd.com, which we just redid, yay! That'll take 6 months of my perfectionism right here. I have a confidence on camera checklist. You can schedule a 20-minute, complimentary let's get connected call. And you can also go to Instagram, Elaine Williams Fun, because, you know, I want to make it fun and share tips and tools, but I think we all can use humor right now.
100%. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for sharing so authentically today. And really, you're doing amazing work. And I just really appreciate what you're doing for everyone that needs to hear a vulnerable, authentic message with a little bit of humor. Amazing, Elaine.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks so much. And that's all for now. So if you're listening and loving what you heard, please like and subscribe. Reviews are great too and much appreciated. And if you're a woman in the middle who's 50 or over and an entrepreneur and would like to come on the show, please go to www.midlifeinterviews.com and fill out an application. We'd love to have you on to share your story. Thanks so much for listening. It's never too late for you to put yourself on your agenda. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you again soon. Now, real quick before we say goodbye, if you are connecting with the show, I'd love to invite you to a happiness breakthrough coaching session. It's my laser-focused coaching call that will help you get clear about what's getting in your way as a woman in the middle entrepreneur and confident about your next steps to more happiness in your next chapter. Head over to www.nextchapterbreakthrough.com. Talk to you soon.